All right. Hey, where's that music coming from? Hey, it's 4 o'clock. You're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio. Some strange sounds in the background. It's 4 o'clock, time now for Out of the Box. This is normally a call-in show, but unfortunately our phone lines are down, so there will be no calling in. But we'll try to keep you entertained for a couple of hours anyway.
Well, you know, Dave, we are resourceful here, and together we are unstoppable. So
Wait. Don't get into that yet. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But
all right, we got a surprise for you, the dear listener, today, and we'll get into that in just a minute.
I first need to say that Out of the Box is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with these underwriters.
Alehale Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic, acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, electromagnetic cellular therapy, and spinal rehab. Most major health insurance plans and Medicare accepted. Open Monday through Friday, 332-5580 or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
HawaiiGaga.com, Hawaii Vacation Rental Directory and Vacation Guide. A proud sponsor of Kauai Community Radio, Hawaii Gaga also publishes the Kauai GPS Tour Guide, an audio tour of Kauai for iPhones. More information online at HawaiiGaga.com.
If you're a candidate for political office and would like to speak to Kauai on KKCR, call in to our public affairs talk shows, Tuesdays and Thursdays between 4 and 6 p.m. at 826-7771.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right. So, as you may have heard, we had a little bit of Mother Nature messing with us this week here. The other day when we had a little thunder shower, and it was kind of a strange little event there. I don't think I'd seen anything quite like that before. But we had a bunch of lightning up in the North Shore here, and one hit pretty close to the studio and knocked out our phone system and blew the board on the phone. So phones are dead. You cannot call the station, and that'll make for an interesting call-in show.
Well, it will, Dave, because as I was trying to say earlier, we are resourceful. We are clever. There are clever monkeys here at KKCR, and we have a workaround for you. If you are listening and you're near your computer, you can send us email to dj@kkcr.org. And this is exciting because I didn't know this. And did you know this, what I'm about to say?
Yes, I did. I knew this.
Yeah, okay, but you've only known it for like 15 minutes because I just told you.
I didn't know before that.
Okay, all right. So on your phone, if you have a cell phone, you can text us also to dj@kkcr.org, and that will come into us here in the studio. And so thank you for Dean, the station manager, for letting us know about that. That's a pretty great workaround. If you want to give me a call, you can call me at don't call me, but you can text me at, what's my number, 808-212-7686. But I think the main channel is going to be dj@kkcr.org.
Right, so you can send an email or a text to dj@kkcr.org.
And do we have anything in there yet?
No, just the test one I sent earlier.
Okay, well then that's not nothing, Dave.
So hopefully then, if you have anything you want to bring up, in response to what we're saying, a topic you want to bring up, go ahead and send a message, forward an article, whatever you want to do. We're going to try this, and hopefully we'll get some feedback from the audience here, because otherwise, there's nothing.
Well, that's not true, Dave, because you and I each bring ourselves and our best efforts into the studio each week.
That's right.
Yeah, that is right.
Okay, so It is, what's the date today? October 2nd.
Yeah, October 2, in this part of the world. It's already midnight GMT, so they're already in October 3rd. Just to remind listeners that there are two simultaneous global dates in effect at all times around the world. So wherever you are, that's great.
No,
but there's always tomorrow.
At a moment, though, isn't there one date every day?
That's too complicated for me to know.
Right. When midnight hits the dateline, then for that one moment, then there's the same day all around the year, the world.
You might be right, Dave.
And then beyond that, then there's two separate
days. You might be right. That might be the magical zero moment.
Yes, but it's only for a second.
Not even. Probably less.
Yes. Whatever. An instant.
A moment. A tick. One little tick of time.
Okay. Well, let's see. I guess what we're going to do, we're probably going to play a little music here today to fill in some of the time. But also, we've got a few items that we are prepared to talk about. And hopefully we'll be getting some texts and emails into the studio. And I will check that regularly throughout the show.
And we'll give it out frequently because this is a new thing. So, hey, everybody. It's a new behavior. Check it out. Try it out. We'll see where it goes. It's an experiment.
Okay.
DJ@kkcr.org.
All right. So what is going on in the world? We have a new war. That's pretty exciting, huh?
We do. You and me, Dave?
We do, yes.
You and I have a new war.
Our representatives have gotten us into a new war.
Well, that doesn't sound very good. I didn't like the old wars. What's going to be good about the new war?
Well, the old wars haven't really even ended yet before the new one has started.
Huh.
Used to be a little gap between them, but now they're just like all happening at the same time.
All fast and furious.
But they're all in the same region of the world.
The arc of instability?
Which is... not a coincidence, because this is a clash of civilizations.
Wow, that's what some people say.
That they promised us it would not be, but it, you know, the record speaks for itself. All of our new wars are against Muslim countries, it appears. So anyway, ISIS, now the baddest guys in the world.
Oh, no, except for the brand new bad guys.
Oh, there's new guys.
Yeah, what are they called? The
Khorasan?
Khorasan group.
Yeah.
They don't call themselves that, but that's what the CIA calls them.
Well, nobody... Well, anyway.
They're bad.
Khorasan
is so bad.
Supposedly even worse.
Yeah,
right?
even worse. Even worse than bad.
But...
What's that guy's name in 1984, the one we all are supposed to hate?
Oh, I don't remember the name.
I think it was Emmanuel Goldstein.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, he was enemy number one, the great hated enemy that we could all get together. And, you know, everybody has different opinions about all kinds of different stuff, but we could at least all agree that we hate Emmanuel Goldstein. And I think they would get together every day at, like, noon or something and hate him all together at the same moment.
Oh, yeah?
Get their little hate on.
Now, do you hate ISIS?
No.
ISIL?
No. Nor the Islamic State, no.
Or whatever they call themselves, or we call them any point in time.
No.
Well, there's a lot of...
I don't hate anyone, Dave.
There's a lot.
Not even you.
I'm with you. I'm with you there. But, you know, I'm suspicious of this whole thing. I'm suspicious of anything that the government tells me these days. But, you know, we never heard about these guys. All of a sudden, they just pop out of nowhere. They got all new trucks. They've got logos on their vehicles.
Yeah, they got matching hoodies. They've got T-shirts on sale on Facebook.
They've got a website.
Mm-hmm. They're sending out tweets.
Yeah, and this is pretty organized for a
sophisticated media campaign
that didn't exist just a few days ago.
Yeah, and I think that they've been around for a while, or so I'm told. But yeah. I think the absence of information about ISIS or ISIL or whoever they are, really goes to show you what a fantastic job the $68 billion of taxpayer money that goes to support the 17 overlapping intelligence agencies within the intelligence community.
Yeah.
It just shows to show you what a great job they're doing.
Right, but
by not finding out about this stuff.
Totally missed this one.
Yeah, gosh, how'd that happen?
I don't know, but I think from what I hear is that we created ISIS. I mean, United States government funded a bunch of radical Islamists who wanted to overthrow the, or who we wanted to overthrow the government of Syria.
Well, now, you know, I don't want to keep interrupting your train of thought because I think that you have a really good point to make. But every time you say the word we, it makes me confused because I don't feel that way at all.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't think you do, so...
But I think polls have shown that most people hate ISIS and feel like this is a good thing to do.
Well,
but that just means that they're successful in their PR campaign. The Obama administration is successful in their campaign. Or maybe it's the neocons, the neoconservatives in the Obama administration, who were successful in selling this war. Now, one of the big things
I guess just to finish up with that point, and I want to let you get back to where you're going, but if you would just say the federal government...
That's kind of a sticky issue there, because I don't know if that's necessarily correct either, because, I mean, it's not obviously not you or I voted for this war.
Not me.
And nobody, you know, I didn't hear any big groundswell of support. Listen, we got to get these guys, you know, and, you know, it was mostly from the right, I believe, because remember when Obama got on TV and he said, you know, I don't. They ask him, "What are you going to do about this ISIS group?" He said, "Well, we don't really have a strategy for that." You know,
and I guess they jumped all over him. I guess they came up with one.
Jumped all over him. You know, even if you don't have a strategy, Mr. Obama, don't tell the enemy that we don't have one. You know, that you're just giving away your cards there. But anyway.
Just don't say we when you talk about what they are doing, because it gets me confused every time.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, you and I did not vote for this, and most people in the country did not vote for this. But it is our country that is at war in this instance here. It is the United States military conducting these military operations. And now...
And it's not just the U.S. military.
The question is it really even a war? I mean, this is a new territory we're in now. We're just bombing places.
Well, now you say we again, Dave. And
but is this military operation a war if all you're doing is bombing and sending drones in and killing people? You know, generally wars, you know, are hand-to-hand combat, you know.
I think that's so 20th century.
Where there's a risk that, you know, you might get shot yourself.
Me?
You go to war. Yeah, you go to war.
I don't go to war.
You point a gun at somebody.
I don't point guns at people.
They might turn around and shoot you, you know.
Oh, and that's so, part of the reason why I never do it.
Right, exactly, yeah. And me either. But we've sent in...
We.
The United States military is sending in planes. They're dropping bombs, mostly in Syria right now. And this is another very provocative move here. You know, they're not...
Did the Syrians say that was okay?
No, they did not.
Oh, they didn't say it was okay to bomb their country.
And as a matter of fact, John Kerry, our peacenik in charge...
Well, now, hold on. He's the Secretary of State. There's no reason not to correctly identify him in his position.
The chief diplomat.
Okay.
But he's pushing for war. You know, he sounds like, you know, the head of the Defense Department, or the Department of Offense, rather than... You know, our chief negotiator, diplomatic negotiator. But anyway, he has said that we don't need the permission of the Syrian government. We don't want the permission or cooperation of the Syrian government. And as a matter of fact, if they do anything to halt our operation, we'll crush them. We'll take out their military. We'll take out all their air defenses.
This is John Kerry saying,
yeah,
"We
we will take out all your air force, and you'll be defenseless against your rebel armies."
Well, what does that have to do with ISIS?
Well, supposedly we had a war against ISIS, but it seems to be more a war against Syria.
Yeah,
because ISIS has taken over part of Syria and part of Iraq, and so. You know, but all of our strikes so far have been in Syria, so it really seems to be a war against Syria.
But not, but no strike that you or I have done.
No.
So those aren't our strikes.
Well, you know, it gets kind of murky there.
Well, that's why I'm trying to, you know, shine some light down that tunnel.
Well, we know that that you and I do not control our government.
Okay.
All right. And so
they are in charge.
It's not our government, then, if we don't control it, right?
That follows. Yes.
We don't. The lowly people of the United States do not control the government of the United States or the military of the United States.
It is the
oligarchs, the rich. The as a matter of fact, much of our foreign policy probably is derived from Jerusalem. You know that. They are the ones that are driving.
Which is not the capital of Israel.
Not the capital of, they think it is.
It's officially not the capital.
Yeah. So most of the decisions of our foreign policy seem to be coming from Israel.
I would challenge that assertion because the U.S. military and the U.S. federal government has its fingers in many pies around the globe. There may be a significant degree of alignment with U.S. activities in that region. With the Israeli government, because the U.S. government and the Israeli government are steadfast allies and have been since, I believe, the 50s. So I'm sure they coordinate their military action and regional endeavors. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
What is the United States' vested interest in Syria and Iraq? I mean, why are we even bothering with ISIS? Why do we even care? Are they threatening our national sovereignty?
Not that I can tell.
Do we have any national interests in that region? It depends on
how you define the national interest now, doesn't it?
I think the interests of this operation are strictly Israeli. Hmm. They're not ours. They don't. Who do we care? Why do we care what happens in that region of the world? You know, why are we sending all our military over there to fight somebody we never heard of, who we don't care about?
Well, that's a really good question. That's a really good question, Dave. And I think that it would really benefit many people if they would give some contemplation to that, because a lot of times the answers aren't easy. They're not simple, and they don't come quickly. So I think there's a great value in embracing your not knowing of something and investigating it and seeing what you discover.
Right. Here's another thing that was one of the drivers of this military operation was the beheading videos. Have you seen any of the beheading videos?
I have not, because I don't watch terror.
Okay.
You know what I find about that?
What?
But those videos are instruments of terror, and I don't invite that into my life.
Okay. Well, there's really no terror in them at all. I mean, I saw the first one when it first came out, and basically had some guy, you know, Richard Foley, I guess, and it was truly him in the video. I think they identified him absolutely. But anyway, there was some guy, British guy, over him, you know, looked Arab, but he kind of spoke with a British accent, and he was waving around some little knife, maybe about a six or eight inch blade.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point he seemed to appear to, you know, move the knife toward the guy's neck, and then it quickly switched over to
like a jump cut.
Yeah, just jumped to like a head rolling on the floor.
Mm.
I mean, obviously you're not going to cut somebody's head off with this little knife. I mean, you could saw in there for
I'm not going to do that. I would never do that, Dave.
But
I wouldn't even take half an hour.
If somebody wanted to,
it would
take them a while of sawing away to make this happen. A quick swipe is not going to do it with a knife. Maybe if you had a big, huge samurai sword or something like that.
A samurai sword.
Then you might have some success.
Is there any suggestion that the Japanese were responsible for this beheading?
No.
Alleged beheading?
Maybe I shouldn't have jumped to that. But anyway, the video was obviously,
edited.
It was edited. We never saw anybody's head get cut off at all. That guy could still be alive for all we know. So it was complete propaganda piece.
Mm.
And yet, you know, we go to war because of that, because of some sketchy video, you know. And
well, it wasn't just one sketchy video. Tell the truth, David. It was like two or three.
Yeah, but they were all equally as rough cut and they didn't show anything. And yet we're going to war based on these little videos that someone found on the Internet. So anyway, somehow we got dragged into this new war. And and now we're fighting it. Now we're bombing Syria,
now,
which is very provocative
now,
because
just,
now the
this is the U.S. military and the French as well. My understanding,
British and French.
Well, it's my understanding that
British and French are
up to this
too.
Up to this point. I believe, and maybe you can correct me, that the British fighter bombers, fighter pilots, are only doing bombing runs against ISIS within Iraq.
Okay, they have rules to this war, to their war.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, so anyway. So we dragged into this war based on some kind of, propaganda, and it's supposed to convince, and, just coming off of having been dragged into a bunch of other wars based
that turned out so well.
That turned out so well based on, even sketchier information,
Nigerian uranium cake.
Right, weapons of mass destruction and all kinds of things.
All that hooey from the Bush and what was the other guy's name? Cheney.
Cheney, yeah.
The Bush-Cheney regime.
So I'm skeptical of this entire operation. I don't think, ISIS is a creation of the U.S. Military and the U.S.
Intelligence community.
And probably Israelis as well. They seem to be dragging us into all kinds of things.
Hmm. I heard on the news recently that there were several dozen civilian casualties, deaths, from U.S. airstrikes.
Yeah.
So that seems worse than one or two or even five beheadings.
Right.
So.
But they're not equated. Unfortunately.
Yeah. And why is that? Do some people's lives matter more than others?
Evidently, to these people that would bomb another country just based on some little video.
But that seems kind of unconstitutional, because doesn't it say that all people were created equal?
Our Constitution? No, it only pertains to U.S. citizens.
No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say all U.S. citizens were created equal. It says that in the language of the time, it said all men are created equal, but I think it's pretty clear that it means all persons. So, yeah, that's not just U.S. citizens.
Hey,
that's
we
all
have
people.
Some messages coming in.
Oh, cool.
Okay, according to this, and I won't give the name, David says, ISIS is actually Israel's Mossad and USA's CIA created. A war economy is driven to be perpetual. False flags are now the norm. Aloha, Dave. Okay, wait, there's another one.
And these are people who have emailed or texted us at dj@kkcr.org.
Yeah. So Dave follows up and says, a new boogeyman, a new war. So anyway,
how are we going to win the battle against imaginary, fictitious enemies?
Well, it's interesting because we don't even know who they are, what they are doing supposedly, but we do know that it's going to take years.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, it's like we don't know what we're going to do or how we're going to do it or what our objectives are, but it's going to take a few years.
So again, when you say we, you mean.
They.
The U.S. military and the U.S. federal government.
I mean they, yeah.
Okay.
And so,
The president's administration.
So, according to them, we don't know anything about them. We don't know what it's going to take, but we do know it's going to take a long time. And so be prepared for a long war.
Huh. Well, you know what I think, Dave? I think that as long as military campaigns and wars and police actions or whatever you want to call these things, as long as they are profitable to a politically powerful sector of the U.S. economy, we are never going to see an end to these wars. And so I think that when something is terrible and destructive and murderous, as these kinds of activities are profitable, then we need to make changes in how our economy is structured, because why would you want to encourage these outrageous destructive acts? We have a problem with our economic system if it's allowing this terrible stuff to happen over and over and over again.
So how do you take the profit motive out of war?
Well, you make it not profitable.
So you when you say, buy bombs from a company, say you can't make a profit on it. You can only provide them to us at cost.
Well, I would suggest that whoever makes and drops bombs ought to be responsible for the financial impact that their devices cause when used as directed.
And then the ones that don't blow up, you got to go in and clean up later.
Yeah, you got to clean that stuff up because it's yours.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that we should allow military contractors and stuff to externalize the costs of their products when used as directed. I mean, you know, that's their whole point, is to blow stuff up and kill people. So, and there's a cost to that. And the people who are creating the devices and products that inevitably have that consequence when they're used as directed, they should pay for that.
Right.
And then if they were held financially accountable for that, then maybe they might start making car stereos instead.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And I think, but, you know, besides the profit motive of the companies that are providing the weapons, you know, and the planes and the ships and everything like that, there could also be there's other motives, other profit motives involved in wars. For one, when you invade another country, you steal all their stuff.
I don't do that.
When one invades another country, you steal their stuff. When the United States Army went into Iraq, we stole their stuff. You know,
they
stole their stuff.
Okay.
When they went into Libya, they stole their gold. You know, they stole the treasury. They took it.
Well, that doesn't seem very nice.
When the United States invaded Ukraine or took over the Ukraine, their treasury was looted. Their gold was taken.
What? You know, Ukraine? What?
So,
when did that happen?
Yeah, just a few months ago.
Really?
Yeah.
I never heard about that.
Yeah.
Huh.
It was on the internet.
Oh,
so
well.
It must be true.
Cite your sources, Dave, as I always like to say.
Yeah, the internet. So anyway, that is another motive. So you would have to take away that profit motive as well. You know, and so you say you invade Iraq, you know, and you take over their oil supplies. Well, you can't make any money on that oil by your theory, by your proposal here.
Well, it's not yours.
That's right.
Why should someone be able to profit from something that's not theirs?
Well, ISIS evidently has been selling oil. You know, they've been filling up tankers and sending them out and selling them.
Really? I haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah. I've heard it. There was one even that came to Houston. But they've been selling it through Turkey. They pump it through Turkey. They fill up tankers. They go, and it's illegal. And the U.S. has said we can't.
I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, that's been.
I heard that the Kurds in northern Kurdistan
in Kurdish
Iraq. I heard they did sell, but I heard even that Israel purchased that crude oil. But I haven't heard anything about ISIS selling oil.
Yeah, I've heard stories about that. So anyway, you know, an oil tanker. Full 100 million gallons, dollar a gallon, for crude oil, $100 million for one tanker full of crude oil.
Is that a good deal?
It's a lot of money. A lot of money to give to a group who you don't know anything about.
Huh.
So, we are in a war. So we didn't start this, but we are in this war.
U.S. taxpayers are bankrolling this.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't seem like a very good value for the dollar.
No. I was hoping that at some point in time in my life there would be a period of time with no wars. You know, imagine a world with no wars. I mean, right now, I believe that there are probably 30 or 40 recognized armed conflicts on the planet now.
Hmm.
And imagine if they could all be resolved peacefully, diplomatically, with no firing, no shooting, no deaths.
Hmm.
And then even just, you know, have one period of time, 10 years, 20 years, with no wars. And then people will start getting used to the idea that, you know, hey, you use diplomatic means to resolve your issues. You don't use war.
We could take the trillions of dollars that are blown up and instead invest them in education and health and housing and sustainable energy production, and boy, stop me when I come to the end of the list.
Yeah, right.
Dave.
Well, I would venture to say that our entire debt of the United States government, the $17 trillion of official debt that we have, it's all based on wars.
Well, I think it's only mostly based on wars, but I think you're correct.
Yeah, I mean, the cost of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars is estimated to be, you know, $5 to $10 trillion, all said.
So far, and running, right?
And running,
right? Yeah,
it will be that much. And so, you know, there's half of it right there.
Huh?
In just those wars.
You know? Well, you know, I don't know if very many people stop and ask the question, like, well, what are we doing with our resources, and what is that accomplishing for us? And I think maybe if more people did give some honest time and pause and reflection about that, we might start doing different things, you know, things that actually better align with our values and and the things that are important to each and every one of us in our lives.
Yeah, I think that when the U.S. goes to war, people at home don't really feel it. They don't feel. I mean, occasionally, you know, somebody in your neighborhood, oh, you know, their kid died over there, you know, or came back in.
And that's a terrible. Whatever. That's a terrible thing.
And that's a terrible
that's
thing.
That's a
yes,
terrible
absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. But for the most part, most people are insulated from the real effects of the war. Now, people in Iraq, man, it's a basket case. It's a totally.
They're not very insulated
from that place. Has just been destroyed. Absolutely destroyed. A fully functioning, happy society. I mean, they had some problems. You know, leader was a dictator and didn't let them do some things. But, you know, for the most part, you know, they had universities and schools and everybody went to their jobs and it looked like a modern.
Yeah, the women didn't have to walk around in little tents.
Right, yeah.
They were engineers and professors and scholars. But, you know, if you make an investment, Dave, a strategic investment over, let's say, 3 decades, you know, if you start just blowing stuff up in their country for, like, not just 1 or 2 or 3, but, like, 30 years, pretty soon you have a basket case.
Yeah, and that's what we got there. It's what we got in Syria. It's what we've got in Libya. Oh, that brings me to that article you steered me to the other day regarding the U.S. empire. And we should probably remind people that, oh, by the way, our phones aren't working.
Yeah.
Hit by lightning.
Yeah, we got hit by lightning. And
so,
yeah.
But you can contact us and contribute to this conversation.
Or you can steer us in a different direction, because I'm actually starting to get maxed out with all this.
Oh, like, yeah, me too. But
decrepit war stuff.
But there's one more thing that I want to talk about regarding that article that you sent me. But anyway, you can email us at dj@kkcr.org. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can text us from your phone. I don't know if it's going to be a smartphone or what, but
it's got to have an IQ of at least 60.
Okay, so you can send a text, and this is something I wasn't aware of, but I just tested it and it worked. And we have gotten a couple already. But you can send a text to dj@kkcr.org. And
that's D as in disc, J as in jockey, kkcr.org. And even though neither... Well, I guess, Dave, you are a DJ.
I used to be.
I used to be, too, but nobody here at the station knows about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually a secret.
Keeping that a secret. Okay, so anyway.
But, yeah, you can text us or email us, and please do.
So Jonathan turned me on this article the other day about the U.S. empire and how it is different from any other empire in history. Whereas, you know, the British Empire, you know, they would go out and take over countries, and they would make them subservient to them. They'd take advantage of the low wages. They would steal their resources, and that would enrich the mother country, you know. But the U.S. empire doesn't work that way.
Well, Dave, why is that? That seems awfully curious. Why would the U.S. empire go into places and then not benefit from conquering them and stuff?
Well, look at we'll get into the why, I guess, in a few minutes, but the how. So look at Iraq, you know, for example. You know, we had a problem with Iraq, evidently,
and
and so we invaded the country, we took it over, and now But we didn't do it in a way that allows us to take advantage of their resources or their cheap labor, or, you know, and send it all back to the mother country and enrich ourselves.
And by we, you mean the U.S. military and the federal administration.
Instead, the country was destroyed. The oil production is a fraction of what it used to be, and most of it doesn't even come to the U.S. And so we got nothing out of it.
So what was it all about?
Well, that's a good question, you know. But then again, look at, Libya. The same thing. You know, we provided air support. We bombed them.
NATO did. And the U.S. is one of the lead nations in NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
Yeah. So, Libya is a basket case now. They're not even pumping any oil anymore. It's just a civil war going on. We got absolutely nothing out of that. You know, we can't say, hey, look at all the country we've brought into our sphere of influence. Look at all the natural resources we are bringing back to enrich our
gasoline
companies.
It was terrible that all those people got killed, but at least gasoline is 78 cents a gallon.
Where?
Nowhere. Not here.
It was 15 cents a gallon in Libya, but not anymore.
Not anymore.
Pumping oil.
No.
And so, for some reason, you know, when the U.S. goes into a country, you know, and everybody accuses them of imperialism and empire building.
It's a strange empire.
But we don't get the benefits of it like other empires did. We basically destroy them and walk away.
So, qui bono. Qui bono, that's Latin.
Who benefits?
Who benefits? To whom does the benefit go?
So that's a good question. Why do we engage in these exercises when there's no real benefit to us in the long run?
Well, let me ask that same question perhaps in a different way. Consider this, because when I say we, I do mean we.
Yeah.
Why do we tolerate that?
I don't know. I guess I...
Because that really is us. That really is you. That really is me. That really is everyone who can hear what we're talking about right now. And everyone who wants to text in and join the conversation at dj@kkcr.org. Why do we allow the U.S. government to do that? What is up with that? That's what I'd really like to know.
Yeah. Well, the government uses... You know, public relations companies, they spin it in a way. They come up with a way of selling it to the U.S. government. And for the Syrian situation, it was the beheadings videos. You know, and those were obviously, you know, fraudulent and done, you know, just as a propaganda tool.
Well, we don't know that they're obviously fraudulent, but they lack credibility.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So. So why do we do this?
Why do we allow allegedly what is our government? Why do we allow our government to do that? That seems really nasty and mean and counterproductive. So why do American citizens allow the U.S. government to do that in our name? That seems pretty terrible.
Well, it is not the United States citizens that are screaming for war.
Well, but why aren't we doing more to rein our government in?
That's a good question. I guess it's been a while since there's really been a successful protest movement in this country. You can look back to the civil rights movements of the 60s,
mm-hmm.
The anti-war, anti-Vietnam War
mm-hmm.
Movements in the 60s.
Sure.
But since then, I don't really think that there's been... I mean, the government has been successful in
liberating itself from accountability
or just putting a lid on any dissent. You know, they attacked me. Look at the Occupy Wall Street protests.
Sure.
You know, and they brought a lot of attention to that issue of the one percenters and the fraud on Wall Street. But they were destroyed by the U.S. government. I mean, their leaders were hunted and thrown in jail. Their camps were raided and destroyed.
By police forces around the country.
Yeah. I mean, it was they were crushed, basically.
Hmm.
They were infiltrated and they were crushed. And so now...
Wait a second. Doesn't it say in the Constitution that we have the right to redress our grievances, to gather publicly and Yeah. As long petition as, for grievance.
Yeah, as long as you agree with the government, then that's fine. You know, but,
yeah, I don't know. It seems like some things are kind of out of whack.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of dissent in this country, but a lot of people probably feel, what's the use? I mean, it's never been successful in my lifetime. Why should we even bother? You know,
that doesn't seem like that's a very
strong.
That's not a very positive attitude.
You know,
that sounds a lot like giving up before you even start.
Right. So anyway, it's you know, there isn't much dissent going, at least not organized protests in this country.
That we're generally aware of.
Yeah, because you know maybe the newspapers won't even cover it for that matter. So anyway.
Well, I just got a text here from someone, and kind of changed gears a little bit. So maybe it would be a good idea to take a couple of deep breaths, you know, kind of breathe
in.
Do
you want to hear a song?
Breathe out. Yeah, let's have a little song so we can sort of put a little mental cleanser on our minds. And we're going to come back to the beautiful island of Kauai, where we all live, where we all work and play. And where we have a great big say in what happens. Well, you're listening to Out of the Box on KKCR with Dave Giroux, myself, Jonathan Jay. We'll be back in just a moment.
What were we listening to there? Do you know?
Oh, yeah. That was, let's see. That was Los Lobos.
Los Lobos.
Yeah, they're doing a Disney cover of the Ugly Bug Ball, which I thought, hey, that's kind of sweet. Because it's all about these insects get together and have a surprisingly fun time. And, you know, isn't that a great example to us all?
Cool. Well, hey, I would like to report that last week I was in California.
Oh, what did you do there, Dave?
Over there, I went over and flew into L.A., drove up to Santa Barbara, saw Crosby, Stills, and Nash at the Santa Barbara Bowl.
Say that three times fast.
Yeah, it was an awesome show. Then drove up to San Francisco, stayed up there for about a week, and drove back to L.A. So I got to see a lot of California.
Sounds like you got to do a lot of driving.
A lot of driving, you know. And
how fast did you go?
I was up over 80 miles an hour
for
a while, you know, and I wasn't even keeping up with traffic.
Wow.
You know, that was fast. And so
can't do that on Kauai.
You know, I don't like to just drive frivolously. I don't hate to waste gasoline or anything, but you know, it's fun. Driving's fun. You know, you get in the car, you put your tunes on, you watch the scenery go by.
You flex your ankle and fly.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's kind of fun.
Don't do that at home, kids.
Don't do it all day long.
No.
Anyway. So anyway, but one of the most striking things I saw in California was the drought there. It is super severe going on right now.
Really? What's going on?
Everything was just totally brown. I mean, this is October. You know, they're starting to get toward the end of the season, but, you know, the trees had leaves on them, but the grasses, the everything, the landscaping was all just totally brown. It hadn't rained in there in years, and not much in years. Every stream, every river that I came across was completely dry. There was no flowing water anywhere in Southern California.
So it sounds like you didn't come across any streams or rivers at all
that had water. Yeah, I mean, I just dry stream beds.
Wow.
That's it. And it's getting really bad. Every city had water restrictions. You know, they're
no frivolous washing of cars.
Right. No watering of the lawns.
Right. Because the lawns aren't food. So, hey, got to prioritize that.
Dandelions you can eat, but the grass, not so much.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was really, really bad there. I mean, San Francisco, you know, they do get a little bit of rain. Things were kind of green, but they are already feeling the effects of it. It's been a couple of years, several years of this drought. They're already talking about getting drinking water from the ocean, desalinization plants.
Wow, that's pretty.
It's been probably
that's a major
30
step.
Years since they've done that. Yeah, it's very expensive. I mean, you can filter the salt out of water using reverse osmosis.
Oh, reverse osmosis.
Yeah, yeah, not your straightforward forward
osmosis.
No. But it takes a lot of energy to push that water through those really fine filters.
That's because it's so small. So, that's why it takes so much energy.
It costs, you know, it's like at least a dollar per gallon just to produce drinking water, drinking grade water from. So that's kind of expensive, you know, a dollar a gallon. Imagine, you know, the average U.S. household or person in the U.S. uses 75 gallons of water a day.
$75 a day times.
Yeah, imagine paying $75 a day for water only.
You keep talking, I'll do the math.
Now, people that go to the grocery store and buy water there, which I never do, I never buy water. Water is free. It's a human right in my mind, so I don't pay for it. So I would, you know, when we have the hurricane scares here, I just fill up jugs and I have water there. I don't go out and buy it. But anyway... you pay, you know, $3-4 a gallon for water there, especially in the small bottles. You know, you might pay a dollar for a cup or a cup and a half of water, and that adds up. So that's several dollars.
You know what I like? I like the water that is bubbly.
Bubbly water?
Yeah, I like the bubbly water.
I mean, the natural stuff that comes out carbonated?
Yeah.
Or do you carbonate yourself?
Well, yeah, actually, you can do that too. My sister has a little carbonator. At home, and she can take water out of the tap and make it all fizzy.
Oh,
but, yeah.
Yeah,
I love fizzy water. You know why?
Why is that?
Because it makes you burp.
Okay, so anyway.
I did the math, by the way.
$1 a gallon. Okay, how much? $75 a day, how much per year would that be?
And it's over $2,700 a year.
Okay.
So more than $2,500 a year.
Let's see. I get a water bill. I pay like $30 a month, I think, for water. You know, water the plants periodically, stuff like that. But, I mean, if everybody had to pay $2,500, you say?
It's $2,700
a year.
Yeah, $375 a year. Yeah. So almost, yeah.
That's crazy.
$2,700 a year.
Yeah. So they're already looking at doing that. So the city of Santa Barbara had a desalinization plant before, back in the 80s, the last big drought they had. They kind of mothballed it, but now they're starting efforts to, get it started again.
I would think that putting mothballs in the water plant wouldn't make the water taste very good.
Now they got to take the mothballs out.
Yeah, that seems like a better idea.
Because all that stuff, corrodes.
Yeah, it tastes terrible.
You know, once you get seawater in there, it all corrodes. So anyway, it's getting pretty bad over there in California. So I guess this winter will probably be pretty critical for them. See how much snow they get up in the mountains, might flow down into the rivers, how much might rain in these areas, but right now it's getting really, I think more than half of the state is in a severe drought.
Mm. So. Well, water matters a lot. You know, I think you and I, and you as well, listener, are each about 70% water. So, you know, without water, life gets pretty pretty hard pretty fast. So water matters a lot. It really does. We live in a watery world, but what is it? Less than 2 or 3% of that water is fresh. So that's actually a pretty scarce natural resource, and we don't have to, but it sure would be wise if we took better care with how we use and how we distribute our freshwater resources, not only around the planet, but here on Kauai. I mean, you know, Waialeale is one of the wettest, most watery places in the world. They need to get over 400 inches of rain a year. But that wet spot is not very big. So, you know, in terms of the total amount of fresh water that comes down on the island, you know, if we squander it, we're going to be hurting as well.
Well, you know, Maui gets a lot of rain also.
I think Maui actually gets a larger total volume of rain than Kauai does.
But they are short of water.
That's because of their development choices that they made. Yeah.
They have a lot more people there.
Yeah.
But imagine, you know, and I can imagine this a few years from now, a big old oil tanker. You know, they take an old tanker and they clean it up, you know, get the oil out.
Get the mothballs out.
They park it out there at the mouth of the Waialua River, start filling it up with water and shipping it back over to California.
Hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if that is the future.
I don't like that.
Water from places where it's plentiful.
Yeah.
Alaska, you know, all the water that, you know, comes out of Alaska just goes in the ocean is wasted.
Wasted.
Right now.
Wasted.
So
the fish and the wildlife, they're not, they don't matter, right?
Yeah, right.
Who cares about
them? I can.
Do they vote? Do they have any electoral votes?
I can foresee seeing oil tankers, you know, switched over to carrying water. You know, they've talked about towing icebergs down the coast and melting them for water. If they can do that, then they can fill up tankers and bring them down.
But,
so now, if they start doing that at Kauai, you know, more places in Hawaii, you know, what would that do? What do you think people would how would they receive that sort of proposal? You know,
maybe, I don't think it would be welcomed with open arms.
But, you know, it just flows into the ocean. You know, we don't use it all.
Well,
so maybe the people in California could use it.
We're not the only ones here. You know, there's plants and trees and fish and birds and all kinds of other life forms. Coral, the polyps, the fish in the sea, the sharks, everything. You know, it's a complex, interactive, dynamic system. All these different elements and components, these, you know, fresh water, muddy water, soil, salt water, brackish water.
But when you think about being sustainable or using your natural resources, you know, in a way that allows you to survive, you know, we don't have, you know, iron mines, aluminum mines, or anything like that. We can't sell those sort of resources. Water is one thing we have. If we sell water, you know, it could pay for some government services here or county government. You know, so if we, you know, oil tanker, $100 million, that would do a lot to the economy here. Although it would probably just be run by some corporation and they would make all the money. We'd get nothing out of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think? What do you think about this, listener? If you can, if you're able, send us a text or email us to dj@kkcr.org. I would love to hear your thoughts on what we've been talking about, or you can introduce a new topic, just like I'm going to do right now.
Okay, well, here's your chance. We did get a... We have a message
right.
from a listener, I guess, who says, look up Abby Martin from the show Breaking the Set, and find the show about how great hemp is.
Yeah, well, Abby Martin.
So maybe we'll try to you know, pull that up and play that.
I've checked her out. Not only does she seem to have a lot of integrity and is quite beautiful and smart, but she also seems to be fairly fearless in pursuing stories that she thinks merit further exposure.
Yeah, I like Abby Martin a lot. I like her reports. Now, she is on RT, right?
Yeah, RT. That's Russia Today. Right. Which is a really great information source for stories and stuff around the world that aren't taking place in Russia.
Right, but aren't the Archie Studios are like in New York or something like that. They're not in Moscow or anything. So
right.
It's supported by Russia, but you know they don't. It's not from Russia itself.
Well, no, but you know, like all media sources, you as a savvy consumer of information, you want to make sure you get your information from a diverse array of sources. And, you know, information that comes out about what Russia is doing in the world.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Light Brokerage.
What are you doing, Dave?
I got a new program here on running these carts, and I don't know how to do it yet.
Oh, I was just going to say that...
I was trying to go over your...
Oh.
Be smart about the media that you consume.
Exactly. And consider the source. That's always a good thing to do. Consider the source. You know, like Dave... Consider the source. Dave has all kinds of biases and values that you may not agree with. Hopefully, he's pretty transparent about it. And so if he says something that you don't agree with or doesn't you don't think sounds right, you can check the sources that he cites and find out for yourself. That's not true for me, though, because I'm very ecumenical.
Oh, so everything you say can be believed. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm actually joking because... The same thing holds true for me.
Okay.
Consider the source.
Hey, we're getting close to 5 o'clock. Why don't we do the top of the hour stuff now before you get into your new topic here?
Okay.
Okay.
I'll give a teaser, though. I'll tell people what it is.
Okay.
It's about a gentle rain of starlight. And this is the story of astronomy way up on top of Mauna Kea, the largest mountain in the world.
All right. Okay, it's just about 5 o'clock, and you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Moloa'a, and K284AL in Hale'iwa. And Out of the Box Show is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with these underwriters.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply in Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina.
And mahalo to those folks for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're enjoying the show today, thank you. Thank you for tuning in. We try and do our very best every other week when we come in. And then, you know, on the other week, Jimmy Trujillo is coming in and doing his very best to provide you access to news and information from around the world, as well as keeping a good focus on what's happening here on Kauai and Hawaii'i writ large. So just want to thank you for tuning in and let you know that immediately after Out of the Box, we're going to go live to, I believe, Peace and Freedom Hall, also known as War Memorial Hall, if you like the idea of memorializing war. But there's going to be another political forum there this evening. I think we're going to have the mayoral candidates, Mr. Dustin Barca and Mr. Bernard Carvalho, as well as the 14 county council candidates. And there may even be a state house representative contest as well. I'm not sure which district, but stick around for that. It's going to start at 6.
Well, we were actually supposed to have Dustin Barca on the show today. He was going to be calling in. Unfortunately, the phones broke, and he wasn't able to do that, so we'll have to reschedule him. And we're still trying to get the mayor, the current mayor,
yes.
Mr. Carvalho, and get him in the studio here before the election anyway.
Yeah, I just sent out emails to them last night, and it seems like we're making progress to picking a day, so I'm happy to announce that as soon as we can.
Okay.
So,
it's all yours.
Oh, okay. So, A Gentle Rain of Starlight. This is a really cool book I got when I went over to Mauna Kea and went up to the peak of Mauna Kea. This is about maybe 5 or 6 years ago. So it's pretty amazing cutting-edge astronomy taking place there at the top of the tallest mountain in the world, one of the most sacred places in the world, too, held in great esteem and reverence by the Polynesian people who came here over 1,000 years ago and discovered this place. There's all kinds of altars and heiaus near the summit, as well as a multi-billion dollar astronomical infrastructure, some of the most powerful telescopes in the world. And but they're actually building new telescopes there. This week, I believe, they're going to have the groundbreaking ceremony for something called the TMT, which is the 30-meter telescope. And 30 meters, if you're not familiar with the metric system, is almost 100 feet long. So this is a telescope with a mirror that's almost 100 feet in diameter. And supposedly it will be able to get even bigger buckets of light raining down from the universe than the existing. There's like at least a dozen, high-end, multi-million, multi-billion dollar astronomical observatories up there. At the summit, doing cutting-edge astronomical observation. It's really quite amazing. But what is the most amazing thing to me about all of that is the lease agreements that those institutions, those academic and international consortium institutions have with the state of Hawaii, which is the caretaker for the lands, the crown lands that were that are being held in perpetuity until the Hawaiian government is able to reinstate itself. And I'm sad to say that the lease arrangement there is terrible. It's my understanding that the University of Hawaii pays like $1 a year. So, everybody has different opinions about the value of the astronomy being done there. It's certainly cutting edge. It's one of the premier facility locations on the planet. But I don't see any reason at all why they can't respect the host culture. And a lot of Hawaiians are very upset that that this massive construction projects are going to be initiated again on the summit of Mauna Kea. They're going to be blowing up hundreds and hundreds of cubic yards of topsoil and rock in order to make the foundation for this gigantic telescope. And, yeah, it's all cool to peer into the vast depth of the universe, but why can't they make some accommodation? Why can't they come to some acceptable terms? Why can't they be respectful of the Polynesian people and the culture that have been here for over 1,000 years? Why can't they have respect for the Hawaiian astronomical tradition? I mean, Polynesians would never have been able to get here had they not had a very deep and profound understanding of astronomy that has nothing to do with Western and industrial understandings or investigations of the universe. So, to me it seems like it's a no-brainer. People should get along and they should be respectful of each other. And I really wish that some way of doing cutting-edge, astronomical observation could be done in conjunction with a fundamental respect for the Hawaiian people and the places that are sacred to them. I mean,
now what would that look like? I mean, what would that mean then for an observatory? How could one be built on the top of Mauna Kea in a sensitive, culturally sensitive manner?
Well, I think that's a great question, and I really wish that.
You're just saying maybe they shouldn't build them at all.
Well, that certainly is a possibility. I don't know the answer. I'm not a Hawaiian. I'm not a Kanaka Maoli, so I don't know. It's not for me to say.
Put them on top of other mountains in the world that don't have these cultural significance?
That may be one way to go. I know the reason why the scientific community says that they have to be there is because of the unique atmospheric conditions there. Because the way the air mass moves over the Pacific Ocean is a very smooth laminar flow. So, and it's also very dry up at the summit. There's not a lot of moisture content in the air. So those are atmospheric conditions that are highly conducive to making, really high-end astronomical observations. But they should do that only in conjunction with and in accord with the people who are of this place. One really easy thing that they could do to accommodate that is they could pay some reasonable rent on the location as opposed to, like, just token absurd minuscule amounts of money. Now, I'm not saying that that is a complete and total solution to the issue, but that's a good place to begin. You know, if they're going to spend billions of dollars on these massive telescopes, it seems like they could be kicking down something to the Kanaka Maoli. They certainly can afford it. So it's all about priorities and values.
But if these are, you know, government agencies that are putting these telescopes up.
That's a lot of academic institutions like the University of Hawaii. And,
right, but
sure.
Their money would come from the government and it would go to the government. So it's basically just moving it from one pocket to another, wouldn't it? I mean, if it was a corporation, you know, wanted to put something up there and they have a profit motive, then they should, you know, return some of that to the local community. But, you know, if the government is doing it on government land and, you know...
The
government controls the land.
Yeah, but they're supposed to be controlling it on the behalf of the Hawaiian government.
So, but then we would be paying for that money to go somewhere. Then to whom would it go?
Well, okay, let me put it this way, Dave.
Okay.
I think it's ridiculous that you can have multi-billion-dollar astronomical observatories built in holy places that are blown up and bulldozed in order to accommodate them, while you have Kanaka Maoli without housing to live in their own lands. That's
right.
Crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I don't think that's the complete and total.
Well, I see a difference between doing that versus giving pioneer land, state land over here to for pennies an acre,
mm-hmm.
or $10 an acre per year to grow GMOs for profit. I mean, I see a big difference between those two, I guess. One is a corporation for profit, and the other is a research institution that, doesn't necessarily have the money. It would come out of our pockets to go.
Well, they do have the money, Dave, because you can't build a multi-billion-dollar 30-meter telescope without having money. And so it's not a question whether the funds are available or not. The question is, where do they go?
Yeah, I mean, they would still need to spend those billions to build that installation.
Yeah.
They would have to come up with additional money to use for housing or whatever.
Well, is it okay if I build, my little telescope facility in your house? Is that okay with you? And I don't pay you rent or anything?
No, you can't do that.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have to come to some different accommodation then.
Yeah.
So it's reasonable, right?
Yeah. I mean, I see a difference there between those two examples. So, but yeah, that's a good point that you make in that. But that, now they're having a groundbreaking ceremony then, I assume.
Yeah, and it literally is a groundbreaking ceremony. They're
going to
be blowing stuff up to level for the big. The big
is
pad,
gonna be
the foundation.
Kapuna giving a ceremony, a blessing?
I have no idea about the details.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes.
And I don't even want to wade into all that.
Right. Interesting.
But I do want to talk about a related topic, and that is the moon.
The moon.
The moon, our beautiful moon. And I want to actually pinch a riff out of the page of one of the many wonderful DJs and volunteers here at KKCR. This one is Shaka Kayaka. He's the actual riff pincher himself.
I like that segment he does.
Yeah. So I was talking to him a couple weeks ago about the moon, and I was surprised to discover that Shaka Kayaka is, in fact, a lunatic. And by that, I mean someone like myself.
He's crazy about the moon.
He's crazy about the moon, and I am too. So we were kind of like sharing with each other different facts and information about the moon, and I wrote them all down, so I wanted to share them with you. Okay, so the moon. How far away is it? Well, it's about 240,000 miles away, and that's like 30 times the diameter of the Earth. So you can imagine that the Earth was like a basketball and the moon is like a tennis ball. That's about how big they are to each other. The moon's about a quarter the size of the Earth in diameter.
And it's pretty big. If you look at other planets, there's pretty big moon or big satellite for mm-hmm. a planet this size.
Yeah, it's one of the largest moons in the solar system. There's only There's hundreds of moons in the solar system, but there's only a handful of moons that are bigger than our moon, and they're in orbit around gas giants. So the ratio of our moon to our planet is pretty high, one of the highest in the solar system. But it's interesting that the moon has 81 times the mass of the sun, of the moon. The Earth is 81 times heavier than the moon. And so it's kind of like they actually are in orbit around each other in a way, and that there's a balance point between the Earth and the moon, and it's 81 times closer to us than it is to the moon, because we're 81 times more massive than the moon.
So the moon does not revolve around the Earth.
Well, it revolves around the balance point between the
center of gravity between the two.
Yeah, that's called the barycenter.
Okay.
The barycenter, and that's a balance point, and it's not in the center of the Earth. It's like a couple thousand miles away from the center of the Earth. So both the Earth and the moon are orbiting around this gravitational balance point.
Right.
Yeah. And if you thought of the Earth as, say, Israel Kamaka Miva Oli, big guy.
Yeah.
And then the moon would be like an 8.5-pound baby.
Okay.
Yeah. And if they were on a seesaw, and Israel was on one side, Israel Kamaka Miva Oli, brother is, and the baby was on the other side, you'd have to have that baby 81 times farther away from the brother is for them to balance. But balance they will if you get a seesaw long enough.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff about the moon, but I guess I'll leave it at that for now.
I've got an observation about the moon.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
I've never heard this officially or from anywhere else, but this is my theory.
Okay.
If you look at the face of the moon when the full moon is out, okay, look at the light and dark areas. Okay, it looks like the yin and yang symbol, the Chinese symbol of balance between light and dark.
Sure.
And so just kind of trace out the white sections and then the dark section.
The mare.
It looks just like the yin and yang symbol, and I wonder if that's where that symbol came from.
Hmm.
People looking at the moon.
That's a good question. I don't know. We have a listener who just texted me, who wants to know how much do you weigh. Or how do you weigh the moon? Oh, that's interesting. How do you weigh the moon? Well, I think you weigh the moon in the same way that you weigh everything else, and that is you measure its impact, its gravitational impact, on other objects. So in this case, the Earth would be a good one to weigh it against.
Yeah, and the moon is the source of the tides as well.
It rolls the tides around the world.
Now, we had a message. Actually, a couple of interesting messages here. One, somebody asks, this telescope that you referred to.
The TMT, the 30-meter telescope.
Is it part of HARP or a military network?
I need to do further research on that, but I have some preliminary indications that it is. And I don't know the full extent of that, so I can't really speak to that. But that's a really great question. And perhaps you, the listener, can do a Google search on TMT. And HARP, and give us your mana'o.
Here's another message. There's a total lunar eclipse on the next full moon on the 8th of October.
Oh, that's exciting.
Hawaii. It will be visible from Hawaii.
Total lunar eclipse.
Total lunar eclipse.
Oh, wow. So now, there's another interesting.
That is in about a week.
Yeah, that's another. Well, you know it's about a week because if you look up in the sky right now, you see there's a half moon or a quarter moon.
Yeah.
And it takes about a week for each of those quarter phases to go. So, yeah, that's consistent with my experience.
A quarter moon in a 10-cent town.
Yeah, so now...
There's a song about that.
Now, here's a question you may know the answer to. Why does the moon block out the sun so perfectly like that? Do you know why?
Yes. Because the sizes are relatively the same in the sky.
Because the moon and the sun are the same size.
Right.
No.
No, the amount of sky that they block is about the same.
Do you know why that is?
It's coincidence.
Okay, well, What I'm getting at is,
but actually, sometimes you know the moon is closer.
A little bit.
It's not spherical.
No.
Or not a circular orbit.
That's true. It's elliptical.
When it's closer, then it's larger than the sun.
A super moon.
When it's further away, then it won't quite block all the sun.
No, you get it. You get a ring or annulet. Yeah.
Yeah.
An annular eclipse. Well, the reason why that happens is because the sun is about 400 times bigger than the moon, and the sun is about 400 times farther away than the moon. Now, how is that magical coincidence occurring? I don't have no idea. It's a beautiful, beautiful universe.
Yeah. Well, it's probably a point of balance or of of low energy. It, you know, if you just start a system going, that will be the point that it reaches on its own.
But it's not that way in any other planet and any of their other moons. So I have a theory about this, Dave.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I do. And I've never heard anybody say this before, so it might not be true. But my theory is that the moon being the same size as the sun and periodically having solar eclipses and lunar eclipses was a key contributor to our evolution as sentient beings, because it was a regular periodic occurrence that, as you know, amoebas in the ancient seas, you might look up in that and go, huh, there's a pattern. And trying to figure out that pattern, trying to respond to that pattern, I believe that that may have been a key instigator to us on our evolutionary path. That's a theory.
Oh, that's very interesting. Let's see. Why don't we have eclipses every month?
The reason why we don't have eclipses every month is because the orbit of the moon is 5 degrees out of the plane of the ecliptic. That's the orbit of the Earth around the sun. So we only get these eclipses when the moon is, when the angled orbit of the moon is on the point where it's crossing from above or below.
So is it only certain months that we can have them, or is it any month? It just happens to be, you know, when that crosses that point. Is it the same every October? You know?
No, because the orbit of the moon is not coincident in a like a rational integer fashion to the orbit of the Earth and moon around the sun. So it is typically twice a year, and they are, you know, something like 6 months apart from each other. But I think the sequencing of that is out of step with our annual solar calendar. But if there's a lunar eclipse coming up on the 8th, there may likely be a solar eclipse 2 weeks afterwards, and there may be another lunar eclipse 1 month afterwards.
Right. Hey, we got another message from a very smart listener who says, "Why don't you just plug your cell phone into the board and take calls on your cell phone?"
That's a great idea. Do we have a cord that can do that? You do. Oh, Dave, you are so smart.
Well, it wasn't me. It was Charlie Brown that sent that message.
Now, this is Charles Brown, the inventor.
The inventor.
Yes. I've heard him speak before, and he is very, very smart. I don't understand everything he's talking about. That's how smart I think he is.
Yeah. I don't know. Should we try it then? Or
absolutely.
What? Do you want to use your phone? You already gave out your number.
Well, can you do it with my phone?
Do you have a plug?
I don't know. Here's my phone.
Quarter-inch plug.
There you go.
Okay.
We'll see if the cord fits the hole.
No, I think you might have a mini plug.
I do. Does your phone work?
It does plug in. Wait. What's this? No, you got a mini plug. We need an adapter to a mini plug.
All right, wrong hole.
You can try mine.
Okay, let's try yours.
Okay.
You want to give out your number?
Sure.
Wow, we're figuring it out here live on the radio with you folks. Thanks so much for that suggestion, Mr. Brown. Yeah, well, every life is an experiment. And just to wrap up with the moon, I wanted to give a big thanks and a shout-out to Shaka Kayaka for him being the lunatic he is, because that's certainly near and dear to my heart. Thank you, Shaka Kayaka.
Hello, caller.
Are you on the air?
Hello, caller. You on the air? Let's see.
Who is that? Looks like it says Jeremiah.
Yes, it's Jeremiah. Where is the, let's see. The
Can Dave input. Figure it out? Input. Hello, caller. Are you on the air? Can you hear us, caller?
Hello, you there?
Oh, I'm getting a text.
Okay, let's see. I got to run in through the interface here. Does not seem to be working.
Ah, okay. Well, meanwhile, while you fiddle with that, Dave, I just got a text here from Shaka Kayaka, who says, well done. Gravity is 1/6 of the Earth on the surface. So let's see. So I weigh about 160 pounds. So how much would I weigh on the Earth? 1/6 of that. What would that be?
160 divided by 6.
Okay, hold on. Let me do the math here. And when I say me, I mean my computer. 160 divided by 6 equals 27 pounds. All right. Thank you, Shaka Kayaka, for that. And he also says that that 838 pounds of lunar rock has been brought back to the Earth from the different Apollo and Gemini missions. That's a lot of rock. That's a whole lot of rock. Do we have any rock that rocks like that, Dave?
Do we have rocks that weigh 860 pounds here?
Well, actually, I was trying to make a clever segue into let's play some music while we try and figure out this new audio idea, and then we'll be right back with you here on KKCR, Out of the Box, with Dave Giroux and Jonathan Jay. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thank you. Welcome back to Out of the Box on KKCR. That's Dave Giroux on the other side of the board and me, Jonathan Jay, on this side of the mic. I want to thank you for tuning in today, especially because we're doing some live experimentation with our non-call-in call-in show, and we may have just figured out a workaround. Dave, why don't you explain to people what you've got set up there?
Well, I've got somebody on my cell phone here who I got plugged into the board, and we're trying to see if it works. But he may not be able to hear us, though. That may be the problem. Let's see. I don't know if that's going to help. He might have to listen to his radio, and when I tell him to speak. John, hello, caller. Are you there?
Oh, I hear something.
I do hear something.
I hear something.
Hello, are you there? Very, very faint.
Can you make him louder?
It's maxed out.
You got him maxed out?
Yeah.
That may be an impedance issue.
Yes, I believe you may be correct about that.
I don't even know what impedance is, but I hear people say that sometimes.
Yeah, it's not enough power in the connection there.
So. All right, well, I guess we're just going to... Okay. That was a good try.
That was a good try.
That was a really good try.
Thanks anyway, caller.
Please text in, dj@kkcr.org. And thanks so much for your efforts to help us get through this non-call-in call-in show. We certainly appreciate your efforts at dj@kkcr.org. And we will have the phones fixed as soon as we can. I don't know if you heard explanation earlier, but last week we had that very strange electrical storm on the island. And we had a lightning strike very close to the radio station studio.
I've never seen that sort of weather pattern on Kauai before, where all, you know, the clouds at the middle of the island, was just dark black up there. It was pouring up in Hanalei. The Hanalei Bridge was closed all down the Naupali coast. It was just pouring. The rest of the island didn't get any rain, but, just all the clouds just came up, and then, you know, it was thick enough to cause lightning and thunder. I've been here 16 years, never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, it was definitely an odd day.
Pretty rare that you see lightning here at all, but generally only, you know, with a big, huge storm front coming through.
Well, you know what Mark Twain says about the weather?
What's that?
He says that people talk a lot about the weather, but they never do anything
Nobody
about it.
Nobody ever does anything about it.
Nobody ever does anything about
it.
We have a
message from a listener who says, why does the moon not spin like all the other celestial bodies?
Oh, okay. Well, let's see if we can answer that question and then move on to other topics on the show. We only have about half an hour left before we're going to go live to the political forum in Lihue. So we want to try and cover as much ground as we can. Do you know the answer to that, Dave?
I do, yes.
You do, okay.
You have a much better explanation than I do. About
I do?
That. Yeah.
Oh, okay, well...
Okay, first off, do all celestial objects spin?
I believe the answer is yes. I believe everything spins.
We have another caller. I'm going to try again.
All right,
one
we're
more
try
time.
Again.
Maybe another, this other caller. Caller, you're on the air. Can you hear me? Can you speak? Oh, no. Okay. So, do they all spin?
Yeah, I think everything spins.
Spinning seems to be the commonality of everything.
Evidently, it's one
atoms
of the favorite things of matter to do is spin.
Protons spin, electrons spin.
Whirling dervishes
spin. Everything spins.
Everything spins.
The Earth
politicians spin.
Sun spins.
The sun spins. And the moon spins, too. So the question is, why do we always see the same side of the moon? Why?
Well, that, you just gave it away there.
I did?
Well, that wasn't the question. I didn't tell you that there's only one side showing all the time.
Well, what was the question? Let's go back
to
the question.
The question was, why does not the moon spin?
Ah, okay. So then the moon does spin. So if the moon spins, why do we only see one side?
Because it spins, it takes... one rotation of the Earth to spin around 360 degrees, and so it's always got the one side facing the Earth.
Well, that's what's called
28.3 days is its rotation around the Earth, and that's how long it takes to spin on its axis.
So what you're saying is every time the moon orbits the Earth, it spins on its axis one time. Exactly equal to the orbit, so that it's always facing the Earth at the same way.
Okay.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And why is that?
Because it's gravitationally locked to the Earth.
But the moon is not a perfect sphere.
No,
it's long and a little more mass toward the Earth, so that extra mass is drawn toward the Earth. The gravity is.
It's called a captured orbit, and it's gravitationally locked. The mass, the way the mass is distributed inside the moon, is not what you call that. It's not
homogeneous.
Yeah, it's not symmetrical in every direction. It's like an egg. It's a little bit like an egg where the yolk and the egg is kind of to one side.
Yeah.
And so the gravity of the Earth has locked the moon in this orbit. And it's pretty interesting. But it's not the only one. There are other systems that have that same phenomena. Pluto and Charon are considered to be like a binary planet system, or I guess in their case it would be like a binary dwarf planet. But they also have their same faces locked to each other in their orbital dance.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Interesting. Now, I believe it is Mercury that spins once every 100 years or something. It's a very, very
There's someone's going to have to look that up because it's too complicated for me to remember.
Yeah.
But
maybe it's a couple of years or something like that.
It has to do with it's like a pretty close to a fraction of its orbit. So it's like two times every three orbits or something like that. One of you Akamai listeners is going to have to look that up and text us to dj@kkcr.org. I just got a text here, and the question is, can you guys, this is a completely different topic, so breath in, breath out, cleanse your mind, and now we go with a new topic here. Can you guys talk about Scott McFarland? He's an ex-lawyer for the corn industry in the mainland, then shipped to Kauai to be a lawyer for Dow and a lobbyist for the Hawaii Crop Improvement Association. That's the HCIA, the Hawaii Crop Improvement Association. Now, Scott McFarland is the CEO of KVMH, which is the Waimea Hospital.
Veterans Memorial Hospital.
Yeah, KVMH, Kauai Veterans Memorial Hospital, yes. And the question is that a conflict of interest? Well, that's a good question. Is it a conflict of interest if the former lawyer and lobbyist for the chemical companies is the CEO of a hospital where there are many instances of persons in that community who claim to have sicknesses derived from toxicity of pesticide spray being blown from the fields that Dow and Syngenta and BASF and all those folks, you know, that's a real interesting question. What do you think about that, Dave? Could that be a potential conflict of interest?
Well, this is the first I'm hearing about this, and so I don't really have an opinion about that right now.
That's a very fair answer, Dave.
Yeah, I'm looking at it, looking him up on the internet now, not finding it. He was the CEO of Hawaii Health Systems Corporation.
Okay.
Which is the corporation that runs all the hospitals in Hawaii.
All right.
So he was president there, so that might give him some experience that is relevant to running an individual hospital.
Sure. But I think the question that's being raised here is, does his longstanding relationship with the seed and chemical companies put him in a conflict of interest when he's managing a hospital where people in that community are complaining of being poisoned by pesticides and chemical application of the companies that he has a long-standing relationship with? I think that's a good question. I'd like to know the answer to that. I'd like to hear what he has to say about that. And if you know anything about this issue, or you can correct some of the information that we're putting out, please do, because that's important to get the facts right.
I'm not seeing a whole lot of information about him now.
I just got another text, and this one from one of our fantastic volunteers and volunteer coordinator here at KKCR, Dove Little. You may know him from some of the concerts that he's produced, but he's also in Lihue right now, and he says that we're good to go on this side. He is there right now with the remote broadcasting equipment, and he's hooked into the PA there. If you can go online, Dave, and grab that audio feed that he's sending us live right now, we can check in with Dove, and he'll give us a little live report, hopefully, from the Peace and Freedom Hall in Lihue, where we're getting ready for the political forum to come to us starting at 6 o'clock tonight. That should be pretty interesting. Are you getting some progress there on the machine?
Well, let's see. I haven't really been checked out on this process here. I'm looking on the bookmarks here.
Oh, yeah, that's where it's supposed to be, bookmarks. You know what, folks? We're going to go to music again while we do a little technical fiddling. And so I want to thank you for tuning in to Out of the Box here on KKCR every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. in Hawaii Standard Time. Could be any time where you are. But thanks so much for tuning in. You can hear us on 91.9, 90.9, all over the world, and kkcr.org. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
you're back. You're listening to KKCR. This is Out of the Box Show, normally a call-in show, but we got no phones today.
But today, so today we're doing it different. And and as you have heard, we're doing the best we can, and I think that's all anyone can ever do. Thank God, or the universe, or whatever you want to feel thankful towards. But thank you, the community here of Kauai, for blessing us all with this equipment and this facility and these capacities and the transmitters and microphones and music and everything. Thank you so much for helping make this all possible. Just to let you know, we're going to be going into our semi-annual fund drive in not too long. And so if you want to step up some more and help KKCR maintain our thriving position as a voice of, to, for, and by the community, you can do so by going online to kkcr.org and click on the donation button. I think that we've got some kind of special for folks who want to get on, get up, and step up early. It's like an early bird kind of a special.
Yes.
You know about that?
They can always go to the website and hit the donate button.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I think that we have some, like a bonus drawing that you get entered into if you donate before October 6th, I believe.
I'm not familiar with that, but we have a listener has requested a couple of times us to play this Abby Martin clip on hemp.
Oh, okay.
And so I've got that queued up here. I'm going to play it now.
Cool.
So this is Abby Martin from Breaking the Set, a news magazine-style program on RT that I listen to quite a bit. I really like her reporting. Let's see if I can find. Okay, we're going to go to this here. And this is truly multimedia here today. And see if I can get this.
...enough to replace plastic and building materials. That the same plant has been cultivated for industrial purposes for over 12,000 years. Yet it's been classified as a Schedule 1 controlled substance drug by the U.S. government. Nope, not marijuana. Hemp. Recently, Kentucky Agriculture Minister, Commissioner James Cormer, has requested a legal review of the steps necessary for hemp regulation. The federal ban is lifted on growing the crop. That's right. Kentucky could soon be reviving an industry that only a century ago was considered to be the most important cash crop and vital to the strength of U.S. economy. So let's backtrack a little bit and talk about what hemp actually is. Throughout human existence, hemp has been used as an important source of fuel, clothing, shelter, and even food for people all over the world. In this country, industrial hemp was widely cultivated since America's first settlers arrived in the early 1600s. In fact, even our founding fathers acknowledged hemp's enormous benefits. George Washington, John Adams, and Thomas Jefferson all grew hemp on their private farms. And Jefferson was even quoted once as saying hemp is one of the greatest important substances of our nation. The Declaration of Independence itself was even drafted on paper derived from hemp. So what happened? How did one of the most versatile and adaptable species of crops in the world also become one of the most politically polarizing agricultural resources? Well, in the early 20th century, the plant became labeled a threat so dangerous that it should be wiped out. But it wasn't dangerous to anyone or anything except the industries that it could phase out of existence. So what did the establishment do to ensure their allegiance to the very industries they serve? Well, they did what they do best. They lied and smeared hemp through a propaganda campaign that associated the plant with marijuana. And in 1937, the Marijuana Tax Act redefined hemp as a narcotic, which required farmers to obtain a special tax stamp to grow the crop. By 1970, the Controlled Substances Act made growing the crop without a DEA-issued permit strictly illegal. Because of the government crackdown on the crop, it has a negative association. And at this point, you still might be confused because of years of being brainwashed to think that hemp is exactly the same as marijuana, or that its close association with it must classify it as a drug. But this couldn't be farther from the truth. Just check out the Congressional Research Service report on hemp that states, quote, although marijuana is also a variety of cannabis, it is genetically distinct from industrial hemp, and it is further distinguished by its use and chemical makeup. So, Hemp is genetically distinct from the drug, marijuana. In fact, if you smoked an entire garbage bag full of hemp, you wouldn't get high. Yet the plant remains illegal under U.S. federal law. And like I said before, not because it's a danger to people, but because it's a danger to corporations. In the early 20th century, hemp competed heavily with the cotton and paper industry. Because paper made from trees had to compete against environmentally friendly hemp products, the paper industry was at risk to suffer. So, William Hearst, a New York State congressman and one of the biggest newspaper publishers in America, launched a campaign against hemp. He used his publication to smear the public's perception of the crop, which at the same time was threatening his successful paper company. In fact, this very campaign is where the term yellow journalism derived from. But this was in the 1920s. How is the propaganda still working today? It's because the threat hemp poses isn't limited to paper. Reviving the industry could potentially devastate the profits of huge corporations that manufacture lumber, fossil fuels, steel, alcohol, and even food, among many other things, including this. In 1941, Henry Ford even built a car made almost entirely from hemp. The frame of the car was 12 times lighter than steel and 10 times stronger. Not only that, but the car was powered by hemp seed oil. Do I even have to explain the threat that this technology would pose to giant oil companies? Processed hemp also creates one of the strongest fibers we know of, providing all natural materials to build homes, ships, trains, planes, and automobiles, and practically indestructible clothing. Furthermore, hemp seed oil can be made into lotions and skin creams. The practical applications for this plant are limitless, and the reason it remains illegal is simple. It's just one giant push to preserve the profits of corporations that poison our planet, destroy our forests, and bankrupt the world. But this all could change if recent efforts in Kentucky are any indication, and if moves by a few key members in the U.S. Senate succeed, hemp could soon be removed from the government's list of Schedule I controlled substances. The hemp industry could very well be revived back to being America's number one cash crop, and that's one step closer to succeeding against a model of profit, greed, and control that sadly defines this country today.
But it doesn't have to stay that way, folks.
That was Abby Martin breaking the set on RT from YouTube.
So thanks to our listener for texting us that information to dj@kkcr.org. And we are coming to the end of Out of the Box today. We're going to be ending a little bit early, because we're getting ready to go live to Lihue, where the Kauai Chamber of Commerce and a whole host of other organizations across the island have come together and pooled our resources to help put on and promote, distribute, and broadcast the political forum with all of the candidates running for office here on the island. KKCR is tremendously proud and happy to be a part of that. And because we welcome the opportunity to help you, the listener, become more informed and more engaged and more plugged into the local political process. An informed electorate is the foundation of our democratic process. And if you don't have access to information about who's running for office and what values they hold and what positions they have taken and what things they think are important, what their priorities are, if you don't know much about them, then it's a real challenge to decide who you should vote for. Well, I'm never going to tell you who you should vote for, because that's up to you. And I don't think anybody here at the radio station would ever do such a thing. But what we are deeply committed to is bringing the information to you so that you can make up your mind for yourself. I would never tell you who to vote for, but I sure do encourage you to make sure you're registered to vote, and then to get informed and to decide what candidates you want to support. So please,
deadline to register to vote? It's coming up pretty quick, isn't it?
It is. Hold on a second. I think I have that information. The deadline to register to vote is October 6th. That's a Monday.
And it's coming Monday.
It's coming Monday at 4 p.m., and you want to get yourself down to the elections division. If you can get it postmarked by October 6th, then you'll be good to go. Let's see. If you have any questions about registering to vote, you can call the Kauai Elections Division. Thank you very much, Commodore. Their number is 241-4800. So, yeah, do find out if you're registered to vote and confirm that you're registered to vote. Okay. And listen to this broadcast here tonight. And you can also go onto the archive at kkcr.org and click on archive, audio archive. And we have recorded previous political forums that are going to be a lot like what you are going to hear tonight. But, you know, they always ask different questions and sometimes they give different answers. So you want to make sure you hold their feet to the fire.
Yeah. In anticipation of that, we're going to run the underwriters for the next hour, and then we'll be back in just a moment.
Yeah, so thanks for tuning in, and thanks to these fine supporters of your Kauai Community Radio.
Kauai Mini Golf in Kilauea offers 18 holes of fun in a botanical garden setting. Open daily from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Closed Mondays. Last putters must start by 8 p.m. More information online at kauaiminigolf.com.
Kevin Bako, M.D. of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com. That's 808-854-6335 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com.
The Greenery Cafe in the heart of Lihue, just one block off of Rice Street on Akahi Street, serving flavorful and organic soul food, wraps, smoothies, herbal iced teas, fresh salads, desserts, and vegetarian meals. Located in the lush garden setting near Tip Top Cafe, call-in, takeout, and catering available. Delivering to local businesses and hotels too. Open Monday through Friday for breakfast and lunch. The Greenery Cafe, hearty, healthy soul. More information at 246-4567 or online at thegreenerycafe.com.
Kauai Coffee, 100% pure Hawaiian, single-origin, GMO-free coffee. Grown and roasted here on the Garden Island, at retail locations island-wide on all the Hawaiian islands, and at our estate on Highway 540 between Kalaheo and Ali'ali, where walking tours and coffee tasting are also available. More information and ordering online at kauaicoffee.com.
Mahalo to those folks for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Well, we've just got a couple of minutes here.
And mahalo to people just like you, because you are the community and community radio, and we're going to be having our pledge drive coming up, our fun drive, our funded drive, our new membership drive. And you can be a part of that. It's real easy. Go to kkcr.org, click on the donate button, and sign yourself right up. It's awesome. And I'm not just suggesting that you do it. I myself am taking this good advice.
Yeah, and hopefully our phones will be working tomorrow, so we'll be back to normal here pretty soon, and we'll be able to have these call-in shows with real callers.
Yeah. Do we have a little taste of the audio that we're going to get from Lihue? Can we dip into that audio stream?
Well, that's what we're hearing, so it's working.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, I guess that's what they're playing in the Peace and Freedom Hall right now. Cool.
Certainly what they're sending out here.
Cool.
Okay, well, that's all the time we've got here. Just a few minutes left in the show, so we'll probably switch over to some music. But appreciate
after we hear from some more fine, fine underwriters.
No, I think that's it for now.
Oh, awesome.
But, I'd like to thank people that did send their texts and their emails in.
Yeah, thanks for helping us creatively make our non-call-in call-in show a call-in show.
Yes, we got a little bit of input that way. So thank you for that. But it's not the most efficient way of getting people's information onto the air.
We do the best we can. And tomorrow, I think we'll be doing better.
Yeah, we'll be back up and hopefully we'll have phones working again.
Yeah, so thanks to all the technical volunteers who have the know-how and the skill to do that, because without you, it's very tricky to run a radio station.
Okay, well, thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks for another installment of our installment of the Out of the Box show, and Jimmy Trujillo will be on next week, and stay tuned also to our Tuesday call-in show at the Soapbox. And they will have phones by then.
Yeah, and if you have political candidates that you support or want to hear from or know more about, send them our way. We'll be happy to put them on the air. It's a great community service, and we're proud and pleased to do it. So that's all for us from Out of the Box this afternoon. And we're going to go to Lihue, to the political forum coming up next. So stick around. It should be a lot of fun. Aloha and ahui hou.
Aloha.